we're going to look at something that is often goes unnoticed in studying Parshat Toldot. Parshat Toldot has really two big stories which are linked, which is the birth of the twins and that the opening story of the sale of the Bechorah with the porridge and that whole bit, and of course the theft of the Brachot and the Yaakov pretending to be Esav, etc. And the implications of that, and they're huge, because as a result of that, Yaakov has to flee, and as a result of that, he ends up marrying Leah and Rachel, and everything that happens kind of starts from that point. So they are really legitimately big stories. As a result of that, Perek Chavav is usually overlooked in just common discussions about Parshat Toldot. And Perek Chavav, to be honest with you, is the only perek in Bereshit that's devoted to Yitzchak. Mm-hmm. Right? Up until now, Yitzchak, who was born back in Perek Chaf Aleph, was always in the shadow of Abraham. And then starting in Perek Chaf Zayin, he's in the shadow of his sons. And he is a foil or an object around his sons and his wife's machinations, etc. Perek Chaf Vav is devoted totally to Yitzchak. And in previous years, we took a look at this parak from perspective of something suggested by Rav Amnon Bazak, that if you look through the story, you can see that as short of a parak as, I mean, it's one parak, but it's one relatively long parak, but as short of a biopic as it is, you find numerous scenes in here in which, in each case, Yitzchak seems to be going through the same thing that Avram's going through, but seems to do it better. And it's a way of, if you will, reviving Yitzchak's reputation as merely being, as one wag would say, you know, Avram's son and Yaakov's father. And rather, that he's really the next step, and he takes everything that Avram did and improves on it. And as an example, we find that Yitzchak does not go to Mitzrayim, and as an example, we find that Rivka is not taken to Avimelech's house, and that Yitzchak is able to settle there, etc. I'd like to take a look at it from a very different perspective today, and it really is about several key words in this parasha that are somewhat problematic. The story that you see, I've divided it into seven sub-components, seven scenes, and kind of the marker that is used here is something interesting, which is movement. And I'll outline it. In the first scene, there is a famine, and Yitzchak leaves, ostensibly living in Be'er Sheva, leaves to go towards Mitzrayim, gets as far as Gerar, which is in the outskirts of Aza, and he stops there, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, stay here, and we're going to look at that in detail, because that's key to this piece. And then, in the next parasha, we have Yitzchak settling in Gerar, right? Then we have Yitzchak acting as a farmer. Right? Then Yitzchak moves from there in the fourth parsha, the one in the middle, right? And then he moves from there to Be'er Sheva, and then Avimelech moves from there. There's all that movement going on. So I separated this piece into seven segments pretty much based on movement and location. Right? In the first segment, there's the the famine. Yitzchak is on his way to Mitzrayim, and it says he's on his way to go to Mitzrayim, and God stops him and says, you stay here. Now take a look very carefully at Pasuk Bet. So God appears to him and says, unlike Abraham, you may not go down to Mitzrayim. Shchon ba'aretz asher amar lecha. Now, how would you translate that word? Shchon ba'aretz. What? Dwell. Reside. It sounds like you should settle down here, except for one problem. Shchon ba'aretz asher amar lecha. If he meant him to dwell here, what should it say? Shchon ba'aretz hazot. Here you are. Instead, Shchon Ba'aretz Asher Omar Elecha. Now that phrase, Asher Omar Elecha, for Yitzchak is a particularly heavily laden phrase. Where do we know that phrase from? So turn the page for a second. And you see it in passage 3. Kachna binchat yechidcha sh'avtad Yitzchak v'lech lecha al eretz ha-Moriah v'aleu sham le'ola al echad harim Asher Omar Elecha. It's similar to Asher Areka at the beginning of the command to Avram, but it's exactly verbatim the command given to Avraham regarding Yitzchak, which of course carries with it all sorts of issues, traumatic issues, emotional issues, historic issues, meta-historic issues for Yitzchak, And Hashem says, Shchon ba'aretz ashor me'alecha. But you perhaps justifiably translated Shchon. I left translations out here for out of this for a reason, because it's actually what the words mean that's going to become key in understanding. Lishkon, you said, means to dwell or to reside, which means Hashem is telling him, dwell in the land, but ashor me'alecha is problematic because if it's not here, where is it? Well, I'll tell you, which means, what am I supposed to do now? So we seem to get the answer in the next pasuk. And in green, and I did this in green on purpose, gur ba'aretz hazot. Now, gur is a great example of the way that Ivrit, the meaning of words in Ivrit, shifts from Tanakh to Rabbinic Hebrew and modern Hebrew. In modern Hebrew, what's lagur? To live. Eifa tagar, makom migurim, ana atofes, right? That's where you live. In Tanakh, what does lagur mean? Which is the exact opposite of that. As a matter of fact, in the Haggadah, we underline that and say, Arami over Avi, Vayer Mitzrayma, Vayagor Sham. And what do we say in the Haggadah? Malamed, Shelo, Yarad, Yaakov, Avinu, Lishtakea, Elo Lagur. Lishtakea is to settle down. Lagur is the opposite. He came for a short visit that turned out to be several generations. And Charoset. But, Gur Ba'aretz Hazot means do what? Wander around here. Don't settle down. So, where's Shchon Ba'aretz? So we have to see what that means, Shchon Ba'aretz. And so that's going to be a side piece of the shir, is what the word Lishkon may imply. But in the meantime, Hashem said, Gur Ba'aretz Hazot. Which means, at this point, from Yitzchak's perspective, regarding the divine command, there are two, if not possible, likely three different places in the world that to which he has a different relationship. What's his relationship to Egypt? Restricted. You may not go there. What's his relationship, we will assume, with the heartland of Israel, Be'er Sheva and up? Settle. And what's his relationship with the land of the Plishtim? Wander. So he's got somewhere where he's allowed to settle down. There's somewhere, on the other hand, that he's not allowed to step foot at all. And then there's somewhere where he's allowed to be, but not to settle down. Gur Ba'aretz Hazot. Why? Yes. So it's around Gaza. It's in the area... east of Gaza, north, you can't go west of Gaza because you sink, but north of Gaza, east of Gaza, kind of stretching into the north Negev.
Is that the main reason we consider Gaza part of traditional Eretz
Israel? Sure. Sure it is. And
him specifically.
It may be, and it really rests on the definition of Nachal Mitzrayim, which is given as the border. And where is Nachal Mitzrayim? So there's a range of opinions that go from as far south and west as the Delta, which is not likely. The common approach is El Arish, which Wadi El Arish, which would certainly make Gaza part of Eretz Yisrael. And then the minimalist approach is Nachal HaBasor, which is a ravine in the middle of Gaza, but it would still have Gaza be somewhere near the border. So that whole territory, which, as you just said, is part of Eretz Yisrael, and yet he's told Gur Ba'aretz Hazot. So why is that? And what's going on? And why is it that Yitzchak is limited to wandering and not able to settle down in this particular place? So that's another thing we've got to keep in mind. Now notice, throughout this entire narrative, and I put it with a yellow background, there is a name of somebody who is not here. He's not absent because he's dead. He's absent because he's absent. He's elsewhere. He's in Hebron. And that is, of course, Avraham. Because everything that's happening in Yitzchak's life is happening under the shadow of Avraham. And as we said earlier, a few years ago, I gave the shiur based on a Bazak's article. The reason for that would seem to be that this is a contrast of Yitzchak to Avraham. Yitzchak's kind of improving on Avraham. In every one of these cases, and even the last passage in this parak, which is a separate parsha, so I didn't include it, is the story of Esav. And Rav Amnon, in his article, argued that even there you find Yitzchak besting Avraham, that Avraham had a son who was not the favored son, and as a result he got rejected and ejected. And on the other hand, here we have Esav, who is also acting disfavorably, but he's kept in the family, albeit not with favored son status. So we do have that piece of looking at Avraham as being sort of the basis for comparison. Yitzchak coming out good. I think actually there may be, from a different perspective, something very, very different going on here, which is that everything that's going on in Yitzchak's life, in this parsha, which is the key parsha that we have, Yitzchak's life, is happening under the shadow of Avraham, but for a reason which is, we'll get it on the charts, okay, have a seat, is happening sort of in the shadow of Avraham's life. And we'll see how that plays out. And we're going to see that right here in the beginning of the event. So what happens in the next parsha? And you notice, by the way, that this entire chapter, which is one parashat Mesorah, meaning in a Sefer Torah, you open it up, and you're going to find that this is one paragraph. From the top of this until the bottom of this, is that there seem to be seven sub-scenes in here. Right? And they seem to be organized chiastically. As you could see in the first scene, Yitzchak leaves to go south. And he leaves to go south because of a drought. In the very last scene, we hear about them discovering a well in Beersheba, which of course would obviate the problem to some extent. In the second scene, we find Yitzchak going to Avimelech, and there he dissimulates, I originally had lies, but he says that she's my sister, etc., etc. In the opposite scene, the second scene from the end, Avimelech comes to Yitzchak. And what does he do? He comes and asks for an oath, which means we're putting all the cards on the table. There's a reversal. In the third parsha, Yitzchak is blessed by God, and now he has to address the issues of what the Plishtim did to all the work that Avraham did while there, way back when, before Yitzchak was born, which is all the wells that Avraham dug. What happens in the fifth parsha, the third one from the bottom, is that Hashem blesses Yitzchak because of Avraham. So again, Avraham's in the background of all of this. And in the middle of the whole thing is the wells. The story of the wells. And for the story of the wells, you have the Ramban famously, it's the last comment on the back page. I'll just summarize it because I want to get back into the Parsha. The Ramban asks the question that everybody's got to ask, which is, who cares about wells? And why do I have to hear about him uncovering the wells that they filled in that were Avraham's wells? And then we have to hear about the wells that they found, and they had a fight with the police team, and then another fight with the police team, and the third one, and they call the first Asak, and the second Sitnan, and then the third Rehovot. What is going on? So the Ramban, Kiddarko, the Ramban, consistent with his approach, reads Sefer Bereshit as a trailblazing map for Jewish history. A trailblazing map, meaning what the Avot do establishes a pattern for Jewish history that then plays out. And in his take of it, Avraham represents the period from Yaakov going down to Egypt until they re-enter the land. Yaakov represents Galut. Yisrael represents the ultimate Geula, which will happen at dawn, at the end of the long night of Galut, and that's the whole wrestling match with the Malach. And Yitzchak represents the period in which we are in Israel. And therefore he says, what are the wells? The wells are the Batei Mikdash, and it brings Psukim to support that. And therefore the first well is called Asek because there was contention about it. The second one is called Sitna, which means sort of slander. And it's based on a pasuk in Ezra, that there was a slander written against the Jews that happened several times under the Persian Empire. And the third one is Rehovot, everything's going to be cool because in the future, the third Mikdash, everything's going to be fine. So the Ramban reads this as all sort of and many, many scenes in Bereshit as being sort of a microcosmic presentation of the future laid out here. But I think that there may be something else going on in addition to that on a more, shall we say, earthly and political level for Yitzchak, which may be very informative about what's going on in Yitzchak's life and very instructive to us.
There's another comment about the Ramban. His threshold philosophy is...
So, as we take a look through this story, we see that the center of the story is this contention over the wells. What's going on? So the trouble really begins in Pasuk Vav, the shortest Pasuk in this Parsha. Vayeshev Yitzchak Bigrar. In fact, you do not have any Pasukim in Tanakh less than three words. There's a lot of three-word Pasukim, nothing less. So you can't get much shorter than this. Vayeshev Yitzchak Bigrar. It's a throwaway Pasuk. Nobody pays attention to it. It's so short. And it's not a throwaway Pasuk at all. It's huge. Like every word in Tanakh is a polished gem. This is a huge, huge Pasuk. Because what happened? What did Hashem tell him to do? Gur Ba'aretz Hazot, which means travel around. What does Yitzchak do? Vayeshev Yitzchak Bigrar. It sounds like Yitzchak did not really do what Hashem told him to do. He settles down in Gerar.
Even the name Gerar is like
Gur. And there's a play on that with Avram. Vayagor Begrar. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a play on that. On the other hand, if you want to really have fun with the word, gorer means to be tugged. And it means like to be tugged in a bad direction, perhaps. Right? Avera goreret avera. So you could kind of play midrashically with that about Yitzchak being pulled in a direction. I'm not sure that's what happened. I don't think that's what's happening here. But there's a lot of Chomer LaDrush in this also. But Yeyesha Yitzchak Begor means he settles down. Now the question is, why does he settle down? I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Gur Ma'aretz Hazot. And I think the answer actually lies in the other phrase, which is Shchon Ba'aretz Asher Amar Elecha. Right? So if you look at the back, you will see that I've brought several examples of where the root Lishkon appears in Tanakh. And in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, I believe that the implication of the word is anticipated residence. Let's take a look, for instance, famously, in passage 6. What's the idea of building the Mikdash? Not that Hashem is there, but that Hashem will agree to reside there.
It's not Betocham, it's Betocham.
Betocham, among the people. Right. But we still refer to it as a Mishkan. Why is it a Mishkan? It's a Mishkan because it's the place of anticipation of God's presence. You find, for instance, a strange word here in Perek Gimel, passage 5. Hashem tells Moshe regarding the spoils of Egypt, way in anticipation. The Jews are going to request gold and silver, etc., from their friends and from the Egyptians, and take it. V'shala yisham mishchenta u'migarat beta. Who is Garat Beta? It sounds like some woman who's working in the house or is in the house but not living there. So what's Shchenta? So it could be neighbor, right? But if you link it up with Garat Beta, it may be somebody who is kind of looking there, anticipating to take from you. These Jews are on the way down. And by the way, the irony of it is that you're going to take from them. You think about, for instance, the passage 7. Yisab Yilam Etanav Vayayit Yisrael Shochen Lishvatav. And when you think about it, what does that mean, Shochen Lishvatav? Where are Bnei Yisrael right now? They're in the desert. The desert is movement. They're not settling in. But how are they camped? They're camped by tribes. What's the anticipation is going to happen? They're going to come into Israel and conquer Israel. Then what are they going to do? They're going to live by tribes. Yehuda here and Ephraim there, etc. So it's like this is a model for the future. Now, take a look back at source 4 and you'll see where this may become very powerful in the story of the Avot. Avraham is living in Hebron. There's a war going on, and Lot gets taken captive. So a refugee from the war runs and tells Avraham what happened. And what does it say? V'hu shochein be'elonei mamrei ha'emori. Why? Why is shochein? Because Avraham is currently living in Hebron, but what is the anticipation? He's ultimately going to be the conqueror of Hebron. In other words, he's anticipating taking over Elonim Mamre. Okay, so now let's look back at the story with Yitzchak and see what's happening. Hashem says to him, Shchon ba'aretz asher amar elecha. And the two phrases now work together very well. You should anticipate that there's a place you're going to settle down. And where is it? Asher amar elecha, I'll tell you. But in the meantime, what do you do here? Gur ba'aretz hazot. In the meantime, you don't settle down. It's not your place. So Yitzchak thinks, why is this not my place? After all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, what? Li Avraham, lezaracha natati et haaretz hazot. I'm giving this land to your children. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very happy for me to settle down in Be'er Sheva. And this is part of the land. Why can't I settle here? And the answer is on top of this of the other page. And this is where Avraham's in the background. What happened just before the Akedah? Avraham's living in Be'er Sheva. He's left Gerar. He's living in Be'er Sheva. He's already got a kid. He's got another kid. One kid got sent away. Avimelech shows up and says, I want to make a brit with you. What are the terms of that brit? We agree to mutually recognizing boundaries. That's the famous Rashbam, that Hashem got angry at Avram for making this brit. And when the brit was multi-generational, we will not hurt each other. comes Yitzchak. What does Yitzchak want to do? Yitzchak wants to overturn that agreement. Yitzchak wants to say that now I'm going to settle this land because this is part of my land. Yitzchak is, if you will, pushing the envelope, going too quickly. Famously, Chazal deal with this agreement and say, this is why for hundreds of years we weren't able, and it's a very strange twist, to conquer Yerushalayim because of the agreement with Avimelech. It's strange because it wasn't the Plishtim there. But if you look and say for Yoshua, you could see that the area of Pleshet was an area we weren't successful in conquering. As if to say, you're not allowed to take that yet. So what does Hashem tell Yitzchak? Gur ba'aretz hazot. Shchon ba'aretz. But later on, you'll take it. What does Yitzchak do? Vayeshev Yitzchak Bigrar. What happens to Yitzchak in that land? The first thing is, he's afraid that his very attractive young wife is going to be taken and he'll be killed. So what does he have to do? He says, my sister. What happens? Hashem blesses him. He's successful. He becomes wealthy. And as a result of his wealth, what happens? Vaykanu oto plishtim. And the Plishtim are jealous of him. And the Plishtim are angry at him. And Avimelech gets angry at him and tells him to get out of the land. And now he has to wander around the desert. And he continues to become rich. And then he has no end of fights with the Plishtim. And has to keep moving until finally, where does he end up where things are finally quiet? Back in Be'er Sheva. You follow the train of what happens. It's fascinating. It starts with Yitzchak moving down. And at this point, everything's great. Why is Avraham in the background of everything? Because the entire story of Yitzchak is informed by in Pleshet is informed by Avraham's agreement with the king of Plishtim. And that's what's affecting how Yitzchak is to behave and does behave. And so Yitzchak, who wants to activate it now, the residents in the land, Vayeshev Yitzchak Begrar. And what happens? Trouble after trouble. He comes out okay, and according to the text, he comes out okay because he's Avraham's son, not because of his own zchuyot. Hold on a second. And in the middle of this whole thing is the direct conflict over what? What is it that drives the Middle East? Water rights. Water rights. Think back to the Syrian diversion of the headwaters of the Jordan before the 67 war. Water rights are what it's all about. And so here we have the direct conflict about Eretz Yisrael happening between Yitzchak and the Plishtim, and every time Yitzchak has to move away. Until finally he finds a place where they don't bug him. Where does Yitzchak finally find a place where he's able to comfortably say, okay, now we're good? Back in Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva is not Plishti territory. And the message to Yitzchak is, noch nisht. Not yet. Avram made an agreement, and you have to abide by that agreement. You go to Pleshet because there's a famine there, fine. Move around. Don't settle down. This is not your place. Shchon ba'aretz, because in the future it will be. This is a place that you can anticipate inheriting. But not you. Your kids, your grandchildren, somewhere down the pipe they will.
Why should they get it?
What?
Why would the later generations get it versus
Yitzchak? Oh, good. So there's several reasons for that. Excellent question. Why would the later generations get it? Reason one may be, as we see in Brit Ben Avatarim, it could be that the locals have to totally blow it till they merit getting thrown out. It could be something else, that when Avraham made a brit, maybe the only way to an agreement with Avimelech, maybe the only way to overcome it is either if the Plishtim violate their side, which maybe Yitzchak feels has already happened here, because he'd come to Gerar and look how they behave, maybe. Or it could be only when we are substantial enough to merit being called a nation. And so therefore, the individuals and the family and the tribe can't do it till they're a nation. And that's when the breed seems to be off in Yoshua's time, because we're commanded to take the whole land. But here God says, you visit, you don't settle down. So every time Yitzchak tries to settle down here, he has troubles. What troubles does he have in the second paragraph? He thinks they're going to kill him because of his wife. What troubles does he have in the third paragraph? Avimelech gets angry with him and the Plishtim get jealous of him because of his wealth. What happens in the middle paragraph? He has no stop of contention with the Plishtim over the wells and has to keep moving. Where does he finally find respite? He moves up to Be'er Sheva. And watch how beautifully the text draws this for us. Who went to whom at the beginning of the parsha? Yitzchak went to Avimelech. It's important to think about this both in text and reality in life. Who goes to whom? Always the person in power is the one who sits still and the needy person comes to him. Yitzchak comes to Avimelech. Yitzchak goes south. Yitzchak needs food. Yitzchak can't stay put. Avimelech's in power. By the end of the parak, what's happened? Avimelech comes to Yitzchak. And why does Avimelech come to Yitzchak? As he realizes that just like Yitzchak's father, Yitzchak is a man of power, a man that God has blessed. He wants to have a breed with Yitzchak. He wants to have a covenant. Yitzchak's only willing to go as far as an oath. They'll make an oath with him that they'll continue this process because Yitzchak has learned. This land is not yet for me to take. So he agrees to continue to extend the agreement that was made with Abraham and Eve, probably the previous Avimelech, because it's a title name. And then he settles in Beersheba. What happens at the conclusion of this whole story? His servants come after Avimelech leaves, having made the breed. His servants come and tell him, we dug a well, we found water. Now think about how much that is a perfect conclusion to this story. Because how did the whole story start? How did this whole problem start? Because there was a drought. And here he is back home in Beersheba. Boop, we found water. So what does he call the town? Beersheba. Now it was already called Beersheba. So some Rishonim say this is a different Sheva. Some of them say that, well, when Avram gave it the name, it was given the name, but this is the permanent name for it. What's the reason if it's called Beersheba? So, either Shvuah, because they took an oath, or if you go back to Avraham, what did Avraham do with that first oath? He gave Avimelech Sheva Kvasot, seven lambs. Now take a look at the Sforno. It's beautiful. It's Sfataim Yishak, the Sforno. It's at passage 12. Karata Be'er Shiva. Why do you call it Shiva? Mipnei Shaya Makom Shvi'i Shebo Chafru Be'er. It's the seventh well they dug. How's it the seventh well they dug? Look how perfect this is. It says in the story, Kol HaBe'erot Asher Chafru Avdei Avraham Aviv. All of the wells that his father's servants dug. So he says the word all wells means two. The word all means three. I mean, you can't go more than that. And how many wells did Yitzchak's own servants dig? Another three. And where are all those wells dug? Where are all those six wells dug in Pleshet? Where is Yitzchak now? He had to leave. So it's one thing. You dig wells, but if you leave, you're not getting benefit from them. Where is the crown jewel of the wells? Beersheba. Where Yitzchak lives, where Yitzchak's allowed to be already, this is territory that it's already we can claim. That territory is going to have to wait for a while. And Yitzchak here then never returns there because Yitzchak's now in Beersheba, and the only two places Yitzchak is the rest of his life are Beersheba and Hebron, where he dies. And Yitzchak stays in that territory. And perhaps what this piece is teaching us is several big things, which is, first of all, the agreements made by the previous generation must be honored. It's something that we find, for instance, in the case of the Givonim, when Yeshua and the Nesi'im made an agreement with the Givonim, even though the Givonim lied to them. They still maintained the agreement and didn't kill the Givonim, and they kept them out as slaves, etc. It's also, there are several ways in which we have Asher Omar Elecha. When God says, go to the mountain that I'm going to tell you, what am I going to tell you? You're going to go to a mountain, and say, right, left, cold, hot, what does it mean? So if you're wise, you will keep your eyes open and you will see signs that will direct you to or away. God says, Shchon ba'aretz asher amar lecha. Where are you going to reside? In the place that I tell you. How am I going to tell you? Well, try residing here, see what happens. Okay, didn't work. How about there? Hey, got in a fight with the police team. How about there? A lot of jealousy. That ain't working. Where does it finally work? In Beersheba. What are the two signs that it worked in Beersheba that he's supposed to stay there? Avimelech comes to him, as it should be. Avimelech comes to him. And Avimelech's the one who requests an agreement. That's the way it should be. And the last thing is, to top it all off, we found water here. Finding water here means this is the place we're supposed to stay. And so Yitzchak then turns Beersheba essentially into his capital. And he stays there until, as far as we know, until just before he dies. We know that Yitzchak's in Hebron when Yaakov comes back. But that's the only time we hear about him there. And so, a lot of different ways to turn this into agendized Torah, which I don't want to do. But I think there are a lot of very powerful lessons here about intergenerational responsibilities. And And also about, in a sense, biding time. So hopefully it's more an insight into this parasha.